It's your girl, Queen Sunny Honey, and welcome to another edition of Freedom Friday. That's right. Welcome to the Caribbean Radio Show. We are the Knowledge Station. If you've been tuning in the last segment, you know that Dr. Champagne has come forward and we've been doing a journey on escapism. So today, stay tuned because we're going to take it to a whole new level with escapism from Japan to Dubai, bye, boo. Are you with us on the line, Ms. Champagne?
Yes, I am. Thank you so much for having me today.
Welcome. Honey, you have been doing lives about this topic and it's been getting hot. For everyone who missed out last time, please define for us what escapism truly is.
Well, I think escapism, I mean, we're both teachers. When you look at the word, the base word is to escape, which is a verb. And escape just means to try to leave someone or a place. And people are usually escaping because maybe the situation is not ideal and they want something better. Which I think is great. Escapism is the process of wanting to leave a place or a person for something that is better. But when we apply that specifically to Blacks in general, Blacks, because of, you know, racist white supremacy, which is a worldwide thing, a lot of us think, oh, if I go to, you know, Japan or if I go to the Middle East, I don't have to deal with, you know, my problems back in America or wherever you're from. But the thing you have to realize is that every place you will have problems because that's just part of human life.
That's right. And for those historians out there that go back to back to slavery, this is not dreidophobia. Is that the way it was pronounced? When a slave ran off the plantation, they actually had some type of medical terminology to say, this nigga crazy. Something wrong
right.
with you.
So where are you going? Why are you leaving?
Gave a whole medical diagnosis for someone escaping. Now, the fact that you gave the context of the etymology is where people are trying to leave for something better. But the root issues never go away. Today,
Thank
we want to go deeper into this and look at Japan and this connection to Dubai. Girl, tell us the backstory on this one.
Okay, I've been waiting for this. Well, as you guys know, I think I told you last week that I have just finished my cram school job. So now I can focus on university and, you know, doing more lives and just being more present on social media. So my friend, and I also apologize to him too, because I have been gone. And he texted me and he said, oh my God, is this something I did? And I told him, this is not on you. This is all me. I apologize. Anytime you need me, I am there for you. So we had a good conversation and my friend, nice Black American man, you know, he's about 10 years older than me, but he looks very young. You know, Black men, you guys all look young. But he was saying how he wanted to go to Dubai. And I said, Dubai and do what? And he was like, you know, I think he was saying something more of like doing a modeling gig. And I was like, dude, you're not a model. Like, I mean, you are fine, but you know, that's not what you do. You're an English teacher like me. You know, I said, I'm not trying to hate, but I feel that in our relationship, we can tell each other when the other one is about to go off straight, you know, and I don't want you to get caught up like that. You know, a lot of people get caught up with the glitz of the Middle East and Dubai. And I've been to Dubai, so I'm going to talk about this specifically. But like I said, my friend, he was saying he wanted to, you know, I guess do a modeling gig or some type of gig. And I just had to break it down to him. So I just told him, you know, I went to Dubai, I believe during the Lehman Brothers shock. So 2008, the Japanese yen was very strong. So I was getting it in. I was at the gold market. I was so happy that year. So I was just telling him, like, you know, you're foundational Black American. Of course, like, we don't deal with, you know, the racism that other Blacks will. And that's not hating. That's either facts or it's not. I'm not here to debate. So I said, you know, because you are American, you're not going to have to deal with that as much. I said, but the thing is, when you have a contract in Dubai, I'm not so sure about modeling, but for teaching, because I was telling him, you want something that's long-lasting. Modeling for you as a black man in Dubai is not long-lasting. You would need to become a teacher, like we're teachers in Japan. Once you become a teacher or any other job, that is your contract. That contract is your contract, and there's really no way to get out of it. If you have a two-year contract, then you have a two-year contract. Another thing is that a lot of times, and this is not legal, but a lot of companies will take your passport to keep you from doing what they call a runner. Because a lot of people get there and they're like, whoa, this is not what I signed up for. And it's like, oh, well, you're not leaving. And I'm not giving your passport to leave either. Now, that practice is illegal because all passports are owned by the government that issued that passport. So even though I have an American passport, that's not my passport. That's the United States of America's passport. But sometimes your passport will get taken, which is not cool. Another thing with the housing, like they'll say, oh, we have a house for you. Oh, that's great. But the thing is, like, and I'm going to digress a little bit. Like, I read in my contract, because I actually went there, you know, to go to the gold market and to do some sightseeing and also to do some interviewing. And I read in the contract that, you know, number one, you cannot take holidays. And I was like, you can't take holidays. So if you want to take a week off or something, that's not allowed. And number two, if you get sick and you say, oh, I have a fever, I'm staying home, they said, okay, great, we'll have our nurse come and check you. And I was like, wow. So you don't even trust that I'm at home sick. You gonna have the nurse come to my house and check that I'm here? Like, what if I'm too sick to answer the door? So I found that to be very intrusive. I was like, wow, this is not cool. Another thing, like I've also found out that you have 30 days. If you are let go of your contract, you have 30 days to find a new, you know, job. And if you don't, then you will have to leave the country. Which is completely opposite of Japan. If you lose your job here, it's really no big deal. You just find another job. You own your visa in Japan. In Dubai, you do not own your visa. Your visa is owned by the person who employs you. So once you get that 30-day notice, bam, you got to find another job. And another thing, with your employer, by law, they're required to call your bank to tell your bank that, oh, you know, he or she is now fired. The bank will then call you and say, okay, we need, like, you took this credit card, you took this mortgage, we need our money right now. And if you don't pay that money, I mean, then it's, you know, you will go to jail, which is really unfortunate. And I know this sounds so far out, you know, please also do your own research. But when I heard all of that, I was like, oh, you know, I'm good. And, you know, I was also speaking to my mother about this, and she was saying, well, she said, why do they need to call the bank? I said, it's law. She was like, well, can't you have, like, an American bank? I said, you can have one, Mom, but they're not going to put your salary in an American bank. They're going to put your salary in their bank, their country's bank. She was like, oh, okay, so they're in on it. I was like, exactly, which is, I think, pretty much all employers kind of do that. Whatever country you live in, they're going to put it in a local bank. And I think number three, with the housing, with the visa, like I said before, you know, your visa is owned by your employer, and if you cannot get another job, then unfortunately you have to leave. So sorry for that long kind of rant, but that is what I discovered when I went there, 2008.
So if I'm understanding you correctly, this gentleman is talking about modeling. When I think of modeling, it could be, hey, I have an ad that I want you to do. This is just a one-day gig. And here you are moving just because of the opulence of what it sounds like for Dubai. But like you said, that's nothing more than a temporary gig. What I do appreciate is you're talking about reading the contract, reading the fine print. We, as a people, you know, escapism will get you caught up. If you're just looking at the big, bold words, think about it when they said 70% off, and then you got, you know, from a distance, you're driving up to the parking lot like, ooh, everything's 70% off in this store. And you zoom in closer and closer, and you already got there, and it's up to 70%. So the little things. Now, there's a distinct difference between foundational Black Americans having that passport privilege and those mm-hmm. who are from the Caribbean or other black countries. Can you talk yes. about that?
Yes, and I'm also very honest about this because, like, I said a lot of my accomplishment our last show. I'll say it again here. So, like, I'm a doctor now of education. I majored in education, and I'm a doctor of philosophy. I've studied abroad in China, London, Cuba, Mexico, and I kind of Japan, too, because this is where I did my research for my PhD. I've lived abroad in China, London, and Japan. I've traveled to around 30 countries. I have a lot of books, and I got more books I need to write really soon because I need to get these thoughts out of my head. And also, I was a track star when I was younger, and all of the education, all of that was paid for with scholarships. And I am never like, oh my God, I am just so awesome. I did this all by myself. No way. Like, I never even say that. But I do acknowledge that I am American, and I'm a woman, and I'm light-skinned. So those are privileges that come with it, and I never want to make anybody else, especially a non-black American black, so the other blacks, I never want to make them feel like I did all this solely by myself and it had nothing to do with me being American. So I'm always very honest about that. Now, when I say that, it's like when I first went to China, you know, I went with money. When I went to London, I went with money because I had my scholarship and I was American. We can actually study abroad and we can actually go to school abroad and we just use the loans and the grants from the US government. We can do that. So when I was living in London, like, you know, before I lived in London, you know, I used to let a lot of third world blacks talk crap to me. And I don't know why I did that. But after I left America and I saw how desperate a lot of them are to, you know, be in London or be in the U.S. or to just be anywhere besides their home country, I started taking shots back. And, you know, ever since then, I checked them real quick, you know, quickly, because, you know, you know what it is. You know, just because you come into America and the white people praise you, they don't rock with you like that because they can send you back at any time. They can't send us nowhere because we're the original Aboriginal people. So, you know, it's always this us having to tell them, listen, come to America, you know, be, you know, big up. I know the only way you can really do it is around us. That's how the other communities get on, is what it is. But just be respectful, because if you do that in any other country, first of all, you won't be allowed in. And number two, you guys can't have this fake persona of, oh, well, we're better than the black Americans because they're lazy. That don't work nowhere else but America. Mm-hmm. That's the only place that it works. I mean, even in Japan, they just don't have the same privileges as us. They don't have the same privileges in the UK, even if they come a British citizen. Like, and this is another reason why I did not date British black guys, because they were so annoying. And they're always like, I'm British, I'm British. I'm like, you're not British. You're like second generation Nigerian. Just stop. Like, stop trying to big up being British. You're Nigerian. Ain't nothing wrong with that. So going back to your point, hopefully I answered your question. Like, those are the differences that I've seen in our privilege. It's not something that's fake. It's a born privilege that we have and that we deserve. And when they come around us, they always try to big themselves up. And there's nothing wrong with that, but I see what you're working with back home. So just, you know, come around, be respectful, and big up. That's it. That's all I got to say.
I once had a gentleman from Nigeria tell me why he despised black Americans. He said that his passport would only afford him the opportunity to travel to certain countries, while Americans had over 150 places they could go. And then it went to a level of, you know, black Americans, foundational Americans, are all about a pair of Jordans, but for less than the cost of that pair of Jordans, they could have had a passport, not living in those conditions, but actually access the world. Whereas, you know, for thousands of years, they're on a nomadic tribe, giving up their passports to go and take any type of job anywhere in the world, and all, you know, ultimately be someone's indentured servant or slave. So sometimes there's that secret resentment. Being a global citizen like we are, I noticed also that when people have various passports and they are still black people, there is a silent resentment behind you governing a certain salary because of your passport, not because of your education. And I'm very mindful when I'm, you know, coming from America, I'm just like, ooh, everybody that looks like me, this one ignorant, one love concept. And then you get out and you see all the many, many divisions. You travel to the continent and realize you're not them. There are many white people that were born on the continent, speak the language, and here you are with one language, and it's not their tribal language, or never having the initiative to just find certain things. So when we're looking at the similarities behind the skin, yeah, police brutality will come up and whoop up on you. If you show up on American soil, they're not going to say, oh, you're British. Or,
yeah.
I don't identify as.
Wow. So true. And you know what you said about the Nigerians saying that we have over 159 countries or something like that to go to. I think it's more than that. And he was saying that we're all about Jordans, where we can get a passport and travel the world. But see, the thing is, we don't have to leave to be successful. We have shown everybody that we are successful. If it were not for the Foundation of Black Americans, we would have no America. That's either true or it isn't. And even after slavery, shout out to Dr. Claude Anderson, we became one of the most literate people on the planet. And we also gained half of 1% of the wealth of America after slavery with no help. We are the only people that don't get no reparations, don't get no nothing. Whereas these other people come in and you give them housing and all this stuff. I mean, that's a whole nother one. But my point is, like, we've shown what we can do when it's just us and we're not integrated in other people's societies. We rise up. I mean, Tulsa, Oklahoma, Redwood. I mean, we have those stories. There's so many more stories than that where we was getting it in by ourselves, no help from white society, and what they bombed it. So, you know what I'm saying? We don't have to leave, because everything we need as Foundation Black Americans, we got in our own. When I go to Africa, I bring my resources and education and wealth with me. Like, I don't need to team up with nobody there to get it on and popping. I'm bringing my resources with me. So that's the thing. And also, in terms of the Nigerians, you know, those are my favorite men. I don't deal with them no more, but those are my favorite men. Nigerians are all about, in general, Gucci, Prada, Fendi, Rolls Royces, stuff that they shouldn't even be buying, because, I mean, you don't really need to be stunting like that if people are living the conditions that your people are living. And I know that's probably like, oh, who is she to tell us we can't, you know, have this amount? But y'all are always pocket watching us in America, so how does it feel to have me pocket watch you back? They're all about, and I'm speaking very generally, the men specifically, about looking good. And I mean, I think that's just kind of maybe a black thing. We like to floss. Y'all like to floss, so do we. So, the kettle calling the pot black.
That's right. One of the illusions of being on the continent is all about, hey, trying to emulate black culture of America, the foundational black Americans. One of the worst things that I thought, I came into Africa with this big fantasy of being included. When I got there, I understood, especially, you know, now I see people to return to Africa, not just Ghana, but just this whole push after George Floyd's passing. You know, you cannot move if you don't know what you're moving to. I wanted to just come out and say, hey, you know, are you willing to give up electricity certain parts of the day? Are you willing to
Are you willing to be scammed? Are you willing to go there and give everything and get absolutely nothing in return? I mean, are you willing to do that?
And I was also dealing with a continental African male that expressed to me that because he was Muslim, I won't say Muslim, Muslims, he that ranked ahead of him being a black man. Then the next level was because he's Ghanaian, then that ranked, white people ranked higher because they spoke his language. And then foundational Americans, and then the Black woman came even farther. So this was a conversation all about scamming, on why he could scam, because you're not Muslim, or you might be Nation of Islam, but you're not Muslim from his sect. So, you know, he would see, you might, from the foundational Black American standpoint, like, oh, I am actually going to join in with brothers and sisters economically. Let's just do our power economics, do what Dr. Claude Anderson said on a global level. Whereas his perception being a Muslim was, I have the right to scam you because you're gullible enough to think I'm going to pull one off on you. No, I'm going to use my religion to scam you. Then I'm going to say, hey, because you're really not my brother and sister, my country comes first. You have
which
it.
Which is fine.
You have
which is
it.
Fine. But then, you know, as foundational Black Americans, then our country can come first. See, when we do it back to them, oh, my brother, you're being decisive. Yeah, you started it.
That's right. It's just amazing to see where we fall under that line. And so when I see Black Americans saying, hey, I want to practice escapism to go there, you better go and travel first. Because if you think that, hey, I'm rich, I'm in America, I can I generate $100,000 a year, you can go broke in Ghana.
Yeah, you can. Absolutely.
They will go ahead and run up your salary for that year and say, hey, you can get that replenished. But you moved all the way over, and it might have taken you a whole lifetime just to get to that point. Healthcare. I caught malaria in Ghana, so I'm sitting here like, for anyone that have pre-existing conditions and you thinking that you're just going to retire out and move to the continent of Africa, are you you might have your salary coming in, but are you going to be able to survive the climate?
That's true. I mean, these are all good questions. I think we should definitely have a show about it, because, you know, as you know, I do business in Africa too, Rwanda and Ghana specifically, and what you're saying is 100%. Like, to make a long story short, because I really want to get into this maybe in another show so we can really get down to it. I've been to Africa 3 times. The first 2 times I went with an African business consultant, and it was nothing but and I wrote about this in my book. What did they call it? A professional. What is it? I got to read my book again. See, this is why I write, because I be forgetting stuff. But it's called like a professional hookup. It's like, okay, so they'll be like, okay, come to Africa. We're going to take you to the development board. You get to the development board, and, you know, all of us, I went as a teacher, and, you know, I do business in Asia. So I kept noticing how, you know, how Africans and Asians act pretty similar. I could tell the standoffishness. I could tell all of that because, you know, I'm trained in Japan. So when we was there, they were like, yeah, you know, even though you guys are coming as teachers, yeah, here's a $50,000 investment. And I was like, dude, we're not investors. Like, I'm a teacher, so why are you even telling us this? So it's always that. And then the thing with the business consultant, this person hardly ever takes you to your customer base. They'll just take you around, oh, we're going to the trade industry, oh, we're going to this factory, or we're going here, we're going there. None of that matters if you're not going to go and speak to your potential customers. That's like me inviting you to Japan as an English teacher and just taking you around to a bunch of visits, and you're not even visiting schools. We're just visiting random places. You understand what I mean? So it's like, you know, you go with an African business consultant and they don't show you how to do the business because they don't want to show you how to do the business. And I've experienced this 3 different times. Even when I went by myself the last time, you know, I went to the universities. I said, okay, this is what I do. I want to teach your students how to be students, how to be teachers in Japan. You know, they can make, what, $3,000 a month? That's a lot of money. You know what I'm saying? And that is a tangible skill. That is something any university wants for their student, and that's to get a job and send money home to Africa. But when I would go to the universities, I'm like, okay, well, I already came up, so, you know, when can I talk to the person in charge about getting this contract, yada, yada, woo, woo, woo. Oh, well, he's not here. Okay, no worries. Like, I'll come back when he is here. And then eventually, oh, we can't pay you, you know, da-da-da-da-this, da-da-da-da-that. So it's like, what I discovered is when you go there, they want you to give everything for free and you get nothing in return. And just to digress a little bit more, one of my best friends from university, this is a black foundational Black American guy, country boy, big old country boy, right? So he was saying that he was going to Angola. And I said, but dude, you don't speak Portuguese. I said, listen, let me tell you something. You are so lucky the COVID hit and you couldn't go. I said, because what I just said to y'all is what I said to him. And he was saying to me that they were like, oh, we want you to come and we want you to build a house and we want you to do this. And I was like, what you need to build a house for? I said, I know you're a country boy and you can do it, but when Africans come or even Caribbean blacks come, do they come and build a house in America? No. You mostly come on a job. You see what I'm saying? So, guys, if you do want to do business in Africa, in my book, I explain it. There's three ways to go. You go as a teacher, and then you open your business on the side. You go as an investor, I mean, if that's really what you really want to do. Or number three, you go as a trainer. Like, I'll go for a month or so, and then I bounce. But you do not take all your money from America and just go to Africa without even visiting. And I know that was bad English, but you will be sadly disappointed very quickly, very quickly.
And since we're giving out good information, for those of you who are interested in coming to the Middle East, one of the best tips I can tell you is you come here to work. Nobody that I know in America, actually, I remember when Puff Daddy came over here for the first time, to just know that he had generated as a multimillionaire but never had the opportunity, well, never traveled. He could go broke in 7 days. Jay-Z and Beyonce have a home in Dubai that is near Vladimir Putin's house. Shout outs, I've seen the home myself. So they have global real estate. But nonetheless, if you are an average, foundational Black American working a job, come into this country, you're here to work for them.
Work.
They are the wealthy ones. If you're here to spend and come on a vacation, please don't get it twisted. People who have these contracts, we're given plane tickets that allow us to go home. Maybe I opt not to go back to America and decide to country hop around Thailand and all of Africa and pay for hotels for the cost of one flight back to America. So when you're looking at these images of people, please don't be envious, because here you are taking your salary, trying to save up to take a plane ride that someone else's company gives them that plane ticket every year to go wherever you want to. When you look at coming over here, yes, it's the easiest way to get gold. Shout outs to Mansa Musa. But please understand the society here, they don't need you. You are disposable. None of your privilege comes with you. If you are not a Black American, let's just say you're a white American and come over, you might discover that, hey, in Dubai, that's the tallest building. Guess what? Those Aboriginal people are Black, 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 Black. Get to Kuwait. The most richest people in the country are not Arab. They're Black, Black, Black. And then you look at the Continental Drift and you go, well, maybe there's no such thing as the Middle East. This is just truly Africa. If you're a white person and you get out here, you could be on a military contract, but eventually you discover that this society can easily replenish more and more workers, because everyone on the planet wants a job and they have all the money. Don't get it twisted. It's not like in other countries or in America where, hey, I'm actually valuing you for who you are. As long as that money is there, you are replaceable. So if you want to come over here to get a job, you have a exit strategy. Know that escapism will not work at all. And if you're going to Dubai, baby, the way I always say on the shows is Dubai, Babu, because you will be telling all your money goodbye. Now,
before
we go to this level, I got to give a positive shout out. When I was in America this summer, I looked and I was like, wow, I could be staying at the Versace Hotel for less than it was taking at Myrtle Beach. It was like $400 or $500 a night. I knew people were not cleaning as well because of COVID conditions. And it was like a $500 a night hotel room that gave me Super 8 vibes. Whereas in the Middle East, the Versace Hotel and all these things like this is way cheaper for me. For like $60 is just an hour away to fly. It's just, you know, I go these places on the weekend and It's very cheap. It's Spirit Airlines cheap. But in America, they're really going to tax you for it. America, they're like, where's the gas at? Gas is so expensive. Over here, you know, that's like less than $10. You're filling up a regular size vehicle. About $50 is the Hummer that has all kinds of extra gas tanks. So the illusion of what it takes and what people are trying to reach for is really an illusion. Americans killing each other for stuff like Versace and Louis Vuitton. Over here, all that real stuff, not the fake stuff, that real stuff is at the flea market, and you can't even give it to the Indian nanny because she's only eating her food, wearing her clothes, and about her culture. Escape is
You said the illusion. We do need to talk about illusions and traveling and living abroad. I mean, that's a good topic right there.
That's right. So I
And just to piggyback off what you said, you know, like I was like my brother when I was like I'm 40. My brother is 20 now, but 4 years ago he came when he was 16, and he was like, "Man, Japan is not what I thought." He was like, you know, when you watch anime, you be thinking that Japan is like that. Because Japan has some good stories, some good manga, some good anime, some good movies, like the best. Like, I love Japanese horror. He said, but when I was in Tokyo, he said, it was so quiet. No, people don't even talk to each other. So, you know, like what you said, the illusion. A lot of people will come to Japan based off of manga and anime and Fast and Fury. Fast and Furious, which I've never seen since I've been here. I have never seen that ever in Japan. Maybe I'm just crazy. Maybe I just missed it. But a lot of people will come to Japan with these false illusions. And I had to tell people, listen, because when I was in Rwanda, they were like, well, what do you do for fun? I said, sweetheart, this is Japan. This is not Thailand. This is not Taiwan. This is Japan. There's no fun. You go there, you go to work. That's it.
Ooh, girl, you sound like me. They say the same thing about Kuwait. What do you do? If Kuwait feels like college to me. Originally, I went to Benedict College. It was like Babylon, a party school. I transferred over to Claflin University. It was a very country town. There is nothing you could do. No turning up. South Carolina State was right through the gate, but I feel like the country of Kuwait is just like that. You're not going to get alcohol. You're not going to do the partying. Everything that you have access to in the world, you're not going to eat pork, all of those things. So I came here to work, generate wealth, and then if you want to party, just go 1 hour away to Dubai. You can have all of those things to have access. But the illusion from the outside, or even culture-wise, when they're like, oh, those women are oppressed. Oh, there are multiple wives. And then I discovered my true essence of womanhood here. Like, those three wives are the best of friends because they got three mansions. All their kids got great nannies for childcare. And they're walking together in the mall, spending up all his money. Underneath that little thing they got on is a bunch of red bottom shoes. Those purses are 2024 Louis Vuitton. Them heifers happy. They are not oppressed. These are queens.
Shout out to Eddie Griffin. Eddie Griffin, the comedian, said the same thing. Because he got, I don't know how many baby mamas, but he said, I know they'd be like, girl, we got a movie. We got a movie, girl. We making it.
Yes.
That's funny.
What you think is not what you think. When people go, oh man, you be careful over there. There's Afghanistan. And I'm like, child, please. I'm so far away from what you think is a disastrous area. What's real is the United States and the oppression that's there and the third world activities that go on in our community of foundational Black Americans that are ignored. My prayers go back right back to you. You know, just to sit here and think the assumption everyone is wanting to get to America, when the reality is not such a good place for some.
For everyone else, right. You know, shout out to Jason Black. Jason Black said, maps are very deceptive. He said, especially America. He was like, if y'all really want to know what America is, you need to drive. He said, because y'all just flying, y'all don't really get how big our country is. He said, and when you drive and you see all these undeveloped places, you would think you in damn, where, he said, some third world country. He said, because the conditions look like that. And to piggyback off of this, I was telling my one student, like, we were talking about American movies, so I don't know why I recommended Wrong Turn for him, but he was like, you know, I watched the movie. He was like, why are the white people like that? And I said, those are like what we call hillbillies. He was like, so that's real? I said, oh yeah, that's real, player. That's real. He was like, well, doesn't the government want to, I guess, kind of like help them? I said, no. No, they don't. They just leave those people alone. And he was so surprised. I guess he thought it wasn't a real movie. I said, no, that's based on true stories. I said, and I was trying to tell him that America is so big that there, not all of America is developed. So yeah, what you're saying about third world conditions, yeah, it's right there.
That's right. So, you know, I appreciate that we're giving this reality to people. When you use escapism to run away from it, you're gonna run right back into it. When I first got overseas and I would see black women who were nannies, I was like, I'm not going to have a maid in my home. I'm, you know, I don't want to deal with this feeling like slavery. My mother had extra, well, she wasn't working. So in order for me to get my instruments and go to dance school, my mother would proudly go into rich white folks' house and iron their clothes. And here I was walking down the hallway in the same school and they would not speak to me. So to see that as a culture shock, and here I am now. Instead, I do have a maid now, and I'm sitting here like, look, I'm not looking for anyone to just buy black because you think that I'm your sister and you're not going to clean as well. I went through that stage of how we treat one another. And then the reality is, well, guess what, foundational black American? This ain't my time around. This is not the 1800s. 1865 is come and gone. And I look at people.
Even 1965. Even now, I mean, we can go to the South and see that, to be honest.
But I had to change my thoughts instead of like looking like, oh, yeah, this is a tragic thing. These people left home. Whatever that home was worth, whatever they're experiencing here, they're sending money, honey. They're actually paying tuition. And, you know, one of the illusions of being a foundational black American is your K through 12 is free. The rest of the world ain't doing like that, baby. Just think if your parents have to pay.
Can you say that last part? You said the being black American, something's not free?
K through 12 is free for you. It's not free in the other parts of the world.
I paid for my brother to go to private school. That is not free.
But you have the free option in America, where other countries, you are paying kindergarten through 12th grade.
Yeah, so by living in Africa, you gotta pay for public education. That is not free. India is the same. You gotta pay.
So let's take that in account for everyone who's listening in America. If you had all these children, whether you're a father, you're paying that tuition. Whether you're available, if you're a single mom and you want to do it all on your own and you got all your 3-4 kids, well, guess what, sister? On your McDonald's income, with rent, utilities, lights, all of those things that fortunately don't come with living abroad and having the contract in this region, you are going to kick that out. So here I am in the Middle East with a lot of respect, sitting there like, here's the man with 3 wives. Each wife got 3 kids. Every year he pays this particular school, what was like 15,000-20,000 a pop per child per year, times 9K all the way through 12, and has it like it's nothing.
Right. You know, what you said about being like a domestic or, you know, a cleaner, like I tell people all the time, like I still babysit. Even though I'm a doctor and like I'm a professor in university, I still babysit. You make a lot of money babysitting, especially if you're like American like myself. So, I mean, you just got to get it like you live sometimes. There's nothing wrong with making extra money, and there's nothing wrong with being like, you know, a cleaner if that's what you have to do to provide for people back home.
Shout out to Jamaica, because, honey, don't let these locks on my head fool you. I work like a Jamaican. Always keep more than one job doing the same thing. When I leave teaching hours, I go tutor. Don't look down on the money, honey, because when you enter these people's house, they'll have your dinner ready. The other, just last week, the lady was like, the nanny, Madame, what would you like this evening? And I was like, I'm not hungry. Just bring water. She already brought the water. She's like, can I interest you in some fruit? And I was like, what you got? They give the long list of fruit. Girl, I just asked for an apple. That I didn't get a regular apple. It was peeled, cut, plated, just the serving spoon. I'm like, yes, honey, we deserve these experiences. So having that extra side hustle, that's a meal at the end of the day. If I wanted chicken and rice and sit there and tutor for an hour, that's $100 and a meal I don't have to prepare. There's so much that we can't turn our nose down to because it's the opportunity.
And you know what's funny? Like, I would have people, like, because I would share my babysitting experience. I did this more, like, maybe a year and a half ago because, you know, COVID struck, so we couldn't really babysit that much, which was fine because I got, like, 10 jobs, so it don't matter. But, like, I would have people hating on me, like, really other Black women who were not American. They're like, well, why are you babysitting? You're almost a doctor. I said, sweetheart, I just made... what, $500 in 2 days? What do you mean, why am I babysitting? That's my rent. What are you talking about?
Y'all, stop leaving these blessings on the table. Stop sitting back and looking at things and opportunities. We got to go assets over liabilities, baby, long term.
Thank you. And I use my babysitting money to buy assets. Thank you very much. I'm like, why are you asking why I'm doing it? For why does anybody work for money? That's it.
I read an article recently about South Africa and the teachers there. They're deciding that they want to pay them less based on COVID. And a lot of people who are older, may have pre-existing conditions, are just not willing to put their lives on the line to return to the classroom. Because, you know, at a certain age, you don't have to be vaccinated. So if you've been a teacher, a veteran in the system, and you just realize that the current times will not afford you to put your life on the line. So South Africa says, how about this? Y'all must have been paid too much money. So the upcoming kids who are in college getting ready to graduate from in South Africa will be paid far less as a teacher. That means that the responsibilities, if you had a class of 10, now you got, well, if you had 10 teachers, 100 teachers, you got 10 now to deal with the same population of students. So the quality of education when you have low paid teachers, I can't imagine. And they're just, you know, that's their solution of saying, if you can walk away from this just because of COVID, not risk your life, we must have been paying you too much money, girl.
Right. And you know, me and my man, I don't know why we were talking about South Africa. But I was saying, like, not that I wanted to live or move there, but I was like, wow, I wonder if I could be a teacher there. And he was like, he said, babe, you're an also teacher. He said, but you're, you know, your industry is Japan. You make a lot of money here. He said, don't think that that can just translate easily into other culture. I said, I didn't think it was going to translate easily. I was just wondering if I could be a teacher there. But I was looking, and I think their teachers really only get paid like $2,000 maybe, but it wasn't like a great salary. I was like, wow, this is for a full-time teacher. So I mean, if they paying less than that for a full-time teacher, that's not good.
And then
and maybe I'm still too much, it might be less than that.
Foundational Black Americans have a lot in common with South Africa because of apartheid and the recent things with our civil rights put us in that mark of understanding each other quite well. However, most people don't realize South Africa is only 50% Black. The rest of that population,
now?
Yes.
Now, it changed because it used to be 90% Black. Oh, no, 99% and then 1% white. So the whites are coming up with numbers? Wow.
Well, you got 30-20 between the whites and the Indian population. And it's they're there the same way. Is, you know, we've been here 100 years. You know, our grandparents were from Belgium and came down, and you know, just the
got it in.
Yes. So, and then there's a big controversy when you talk about escapism. Many a Nigerian have gone down to the region, passing Namibia, showing up on the South African coast, and discovered that within itself, they hate each other. many a murder.
Oh, yeah, the tribalism, yeah.
Yes.
Which we don't have, by the way. American blacks, we are not tribal like that. I mean, we might throw a set up, but y'all not, you're black, so.
But it's funny because during the 90s, when there was that East Coast, West Coast controversy, a lot of Africans that I've been dating or talking to, they would say things like, I understood the rappers of this era because of tribalism. I was like, wow.
Wow.
But escapism, yeah. And if you can't find unity amongst the continent, if the guys from Nigeria are saying, hey, you know, we get murdered if we are down there in South Africa, they turn on then how...
They have valid points, because my man, like, he's African, his brother was there. His brother had to dip, because this is what his brother said. The South African blacks were, like, attacking the other blacks who were not South African. I don't know how true it was. I'm just saying what he said. So I think that's a valid point.
Shout outs to Tariq Nasheed. He shared a video of Rwanda this week on his Instagram, and it showed...
Oh, you saw that with the Chinese guy? I guess he was Chinese.
Yes, he was. And if you didn't, if you're not familiar, the Chinese guy is sitting there whipping this African. And, you know, there's a bunch of Africans standing around just watching. So,
yeah. And also, guys, to add more context to this, I guess the guy had stolen something from his employer, who was a Chinese dude. And then somehow they had put old dude, they put him against like a post and they tied his hands in the back. So it's not like he was whooping them and the guy wasn't throwing punches. He was tied up, which is illegal, by the way, because you're not the cops. You're not supposed to be tying nobody up. That's kidnapping. But well, the other brothers who were, I don't know if the other brothers were Rwandan, but they were just sitting there looking at him. And I don't know who was videoing, but and also the guy wasn't hit him with a whip. It was like a rope.
A white rope,
which I'm sure it didn't hurt. I'm sure it did hurt. But I don't want you guys to think he was, like, whipping them with a whip or anything like that. So, just to add more context.
And to take your context to an upper level, I have never seen China move to America and establish police stations. However, in South Africa and a lot of places on the continent of Africa, they have police stations everywhere. Who does that? You have never seen any population of people.
Let me just say this. China, they could try to put some police stations in our neighborhoods, but Foundation of Black Americans, the one thing about us, we will turn up. If you hit us, we're going to hit you back. So we are quite violent black people, but we're Americans. It's in the blood. So that's why that hasn't happened in the U.S., but it does happen in Africa, because the Africans, like, I love Africans, I love Africa, but mentally, they're slaves, they're mental slaves, we're physical slaves, you see what I'm saying, mm-hmm. But for them, it's mental, so that's, I think that's one of the reasons why that happens there.
This topic of escapism is deeper going down the rabbit hole than most people expected, because when you're able to go into someone else's country and establish a police station, and like you said, now here's someone else able to whip in Rwanda without having to go through the legal atrocities. It is also a warning to any foundational Black American, when you go to the continent, the moment you get scammed, there is nothing that you can do. There is no government that will help you. If you got scammed on American soil by all of these people, we know a lot of people in the community that are pocket watchers who are scamming our own community. But at least you can seek justice on American soil. Here's just a warning for everyone else. As soon as you take your money outside of the States, you are on your own.
Yep.
You can contact the embassy. Only on the continent of Africa. Sorry. Yeah. In the Middle East, I'm protected. It, matter of fact, here's the beautiful part. I'm walking in the mall. This police officer is like, where are you from? Because the way I carry myself, you wouldn't know what part of the world. And so I just told him I identified as, and I said, you know, I'm from this country. And he's like, yeah, right, really. And so I said I was American, and it was just so much more respect. Either he was about to disrespect me and say something sexual if I was from the continent of Africa, or treat me like I was going to steal something.
Hold on. Go back to that. Say something sexual, like what would he maybe have said?
He would have tried to entice me to knowing that, okay, you're a low salary person because you have an African passport. You know, try to be my girlfriend. It would have just gone there. That fetish.
Wow.
Immediate fetish. I've been in situations where my Black American privilege kicks in, because as soon as they're like, stand in a line, no, you're American, come to the front. And I'm in the front of 50 people. I just walked in the door. So this range of being able to navigate through a world is different wherever you go. Whereas when I could be in Ghana, I'm not going to be nicely dressed, because I know I would be a target. You spoke about Angola earlier today, and someone that's Black wanting to move to that country. A lot of these African countries are Arab. Don't get it twisted. Please don't just think that everywhere in Africa is all Black faces. You show up to these places.
The North Africa, right? Algeria, Tanzania,
Morocco, Angola, all of these are places and regions you better know that it's not just the place that you're going to see people that look like you. And if you're in a blended scene and you're a Black person, you could very well be mistaken for mistreatment.
Right. Mistaken for mistreatment. Damn, that's a book right there.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
For everyone that's listening, I know we need to wrap up the show, because we're going to have definitely a whole lot more. I want to remind you guys that, hey, coming up in December with Dr. Champagne will be open registration for the 2022, her class sessions that help people. It's not about escapism, but if you're looking for an opportunity to leave for something better and get a job that's overseas, if you need help, we've been in this industry and living out of America a very, very long time. And this woman is the PhD expert, over 40 books by the age of 40, PhD, world traveled, over 30 countries. And so we want you to make sure that you're doing the right thing and taking it from the expert. Dr. Champagne, I appreciate you giving us your time today. Thank you so much.
No worries. I look forward to doing it again. I actually have more to say, but we can say that for next time.
Yes. Well, everyone that's out there, make sure you check her out on Instagram. Give us her handle again.
Oh, thank you. It's Private Lessons with an S, Japan. Private Lessons Japan. Instagram is the easiest and fastest way to get me, guys.
That's right. And check out her lives. Oh, my stars. You will truly enjoy seeing the beautiful land, hearing this sister just go through day to day, what it looks like there. Check out her when she walks in the 7-Eleven and you're like, ooh, this is nice.
I know.
So serene.
I love 7-Eleven.
Well, thank you again. And to everyone out there, we just want to let you know that escapism can be a positive thing. Always know that you're not leaving the root issue. For everyone who's tuning in, remember that you are responsible for the fulfillment of your own destiny. Until next time, do bye-bye, boo.